This is the action for the scalar free field. And I remind you that I am using a metric which is minus plus plus plus. So this d mu phi squared is minus the square of the time derivative of the field plus the square of the gradient, the spatial gradient of the field. Then everything contained in this generalization of path integral, where I integrate over all possible field configuration over space-time with a phase which is the exponential of I times the classical action for a field configuration given by this formula. Okay? And in this formalism, we recovered by an explicit calculation that the expectation value of the time ordered product of two fields operator in the vacuum, in the ground state of the theory, is given by the internal kernel of this operator, the I times the inverse of the operator, the Laplacian, the scalar Laplacian, so delta is d mu, d mu, minus the mass squared, and with the contour specification, the plus I epsilon, which makes it the Feynman propagator. So we recover the Feynman propagator. And we have also seen that it's often convenient in order to build the theory that to consider the same theory now in Euclidean time. And in that case, the path integral becomes an integral of a configuration with a weight which is real, which is exponential minus the Euclidean action. And this is the form of the Euclidean action. And now here I am in a metric with a signature plus, 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 plus. Okay? And then the propagator at Euclidean time, namely imaginary physical time, is given by the inverse of this operator, which is just this operator weak rotated. So this is an elliptic operator, and this is an hyperbolic operator. So this operator is a Klein-Gordon operator, which describes the propagation of waves, while this is an elliptic operator. Okay? And now, today, I will do two things. First, I will discuss a little bit more some consequences of this path integral formalism for the free field. And then I will start to discuss how we can use this formalism to start the program of quantizing the interacting theory. So a theory where the quanta of the field interacts. It's not just a free field. Okay? So first, I will talk about how can you construct higher order correlation functions. So how can you construct, for instance, expectation or matrix element of the products of four field operators, this formalism. Okay. In fact, that's very easy to compute in the framework of this path integral formalism for the following reason. This is basically a result of the properties of Gaussian integrals, okay, which tell you that the average value of those two quantities, phi of x and phi of y, integrated with this weight, is given by the inverse of the kernel operator, which appears here, of the differential operator, which appears here, which is given exactly by that. Okay. Now, for Gaussian integration, for any Gaussian integration, okay, or if you prefer Gaussian random variables, if you are in the framework of path integral in Euclidean time and you consider that phi are random variables and this is the probability distribution for these random variables, you have a theorem which tells you that, in fact, the expectation of this product of four operators is just given by, and that's a very general result, that it is given by the sum over all possible decomposition in products of two-point function of this object. And that's a very general property of any Gaussian integration. It's not not a property just for this kind of action. It's true for any action and any Gaussian variables. And you will study that in the tutorials. Namely, so this is given by, in fact, of phi here. You have how can you decompose a product of four random variables into products of two random variables like that? Here you have four random variables, so you can decompose it in two products of two random variables, and therefore you get that this is, you have three terms possible, phi of x1, phi of x2 times phi of x3, phi of x4. Okay, that's the first term, plus phi of x1, phi of x3 times phi of x2, phi of x4. Okay, and then you have a third possibility, which is phi of x1, phi of x4 times the expectation value of phi of x2 times phi of x3. Okay? And this is a general properties of just computing expectation values of objects whose probability distribution is given by a Gaussian average. So it's a property, it's just a property of integration of Gaussians. Yes?
How come we don't have terms with the order swap if phi is in general not commuting with itself?
Here, phi is a real phi. Okay. Phi is real.
Okay, so we're not treating it as an operator yet.
Yeah.
Well,
okay.
In the path integral, it's a classical field.
Yes, in the path interval, it's still a classical field. So here, this is the average of some real variables integrated in this way.
Yeah. So never mind.
Okay. And here, no, but your question is relevant because in the quantum case in real time, these are operators.
Yeah.
Whose value is given by this functional integral, but this is an, in this language, this is a state, the parent set. These are operators, they are time order, and this is the state.
Okay. Yeah.
But remember that if you compute this object, it automatically gives you the time order product of those two operators. So if you take this formula in real time, here you have the time order product of four operators. So you order those operators the right way so that this one is the one with the time the smallest. This is the second time, third time, largest time. And in any of these products, this is time order. So everything here is automatically the functional integral, the path interval formatting tell you that there is automatic time ordering in every term. This expression. So that's one of the nice aspects of path integral. You don't have to care about how this operator commutes when you compute this. And you know that path integral and Gaussian integration basically will automatically order your operators. Okay. So, of course, you recognize in this formula the Wieck theorem. That you have already encountered when studying the free field in the framework of canonical quantization, which tells you how you can expect these products of the expectation value in the ground state of products of four operators in terms of expectation value of products of two operators in the free field theory. Okay, so Wick's theorem appears as just a general properties of Gaussian integration and of Gaussian random variables in the framework of path integral quantization. So it's a very quick way to derive the Wick's theorem without taking care of commuting creation and alienation operator. Of course, it's mathematically equivalent, the same results, but it's a nice derivation. Okay? Yes? Yes, yes. This result is very general, so I'm not specific. This result is valid whenever you are working in real time,
right,
at zero temperature, or in real time and finite temperature, or in Euclidean time. It's a very general result. It's true everywhere for scalar fields, for commuting random variables. So it will be true also for when quantizing the Maxwell, the electromagnetic field. It will be true when quantizing non-abelian gauge field, provided that you are working in an approximation where the field is Gaussian, so where the action is quadratic in the field, this result is true. Okay? So, and we will use this results heavily in the rest of the lectures. Okay? So now, secondly, I will represent diagrammatically what the Wick theorem means. So I will start to draw diagrams, Feynman diagrams, to represent this expression. Okay? So the idea is in fact to represent this object, phi of x1, phi of x2. I just represent it by a line joining the two points x1 and x2 in space. So imagine that it's just a graphical representation of this object. Every time I represent a line connecting a point x1 and a point x2, this means that I am representing this function, the propagator between those two points in space-time. Okay? And then, what does this mean? It means that in the free field theory, when I am interested in what is the correlation between four points, x1, at the field at the point x1, in x2, x3, and x4, okay? So I want to compute an object which is a correlation between the fields operator, between those four points. So I don't know what it is. What the Wick theorem tells me, that this is just the sum of three terms which can be represented by this Feynman diagrams. And this is one, two, three, four. I write just the labeling of the point instead of what is the precise position, because it's the same in everywhere. This is 1, 2 plus, so this is the first term. It's just this and this. The second term is this. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is what? This is the third term. This is this term. No, this is this term. And finally, this is this term. Okay? So this is a simple way to represent this expression in terms just of diagrams instead of writing explicitly what the objects are. Okay. Yes? So
in the bottom row of diagrams, what does the left-hand side mean with the four?
It means just it's a representation of this object. This means what is the correlation function that is the expectation value in the vacuum of its products of all variables. Okay, so here each point represent each endpoint represent the operator phi of x. Okay? And each line represents the so there is nothing new. It's just a way to represent these identities between expectation value of operators in the quantum theory. But this representation was invented by Kleinman, and it has become tremendously popular because it's very, very convenient, and also it allows you to visualize the physical process where you have virtual particles and real particles interacting, propagating. And I've seen that with David Tong already draw such diagrams in the context of quantum electrodynamics to represent interaction between photons and electrons, or between fields and photons. So it's both a diagrammatic representation of the mathematical identities in the quantum theory, and also it contains a lot of physical intuition. Because here you can see that this line represents also the propagation of one quanta of excitation of the field. You start from the vacuum of the theory, you apply an operator and it creates excitation of the field, and it creates some particle, and in fact you can from the you know that the field operator in the scalar field is a combination of one of the creation operator for one particle and of the annihilation operator for one particle. So when applying this operator to the vacuum, you create just one particle. You cannot create two quanta of the field. So you create one particle here. It propagates according to quantum dynamics. And then you have one particle and you want to substitute to the vacuum. So you are the only contribution comes from the part of this in the field operator, which is the annihilation operator. So this diagram represents the physical process where you create a particle from the vacuum, it propagates, and then you annihilate this particle in the vacuum by the second phi operator. So this represents, in some sense, this represents the propagation of one quanta of the field. Okay. Okay. So, a second remark I want to do is the following. We have not at all discussed the property of this of the propagator. I think you have discussed it already a little bit in the lectures by David Tong. But let us go back to this propagator, this Feynman propagator, which I remind you is given by. I will explain what is this D. He is higher than high exponential I k times scalar product. And here I add, if I don't remember, a minus k squared minus m squared plus I epsilon. Okay, so this is the expression in real time of the propagator. And now I am considering that I am in D dimensional space time. Okay, so I am in a space where I have one time-like direction with a signature minus, and then I have D minus one spatial coordinates. Okay, and this is time. Of course, the formalism works for any value of the dimension of space-time, not only d equal 4. Okay? And let us be interested in what are the properties of this object at short distance, short distances, namely at high energies. Okay? So what's happening when x minus y, the modulus of x minus y, in this is the modulus in with the Minkowski matrix, becomes very close to zero. So what's happening when you are very, very close from the light cone? Okay? In that case, well, this term, in fact, is very small. So this varies very, very slowly. So you have to go to very, very high k in order to see how the integration varies. So when x is small, the k, which are very large, contributes to this integral. Okay? And if the k's are very large, you can neglect the effect of the mass of the particle. And that's something you expect. You know, at very high energy, the dynamics of a massless particle and of the light particle should look the same, because you are at very, very high energy. So the rest mass is not important. Okay? And so you can approximate in this expression for the propagator this Fourier transform by the Fourier transform where you have the propagator of a massless particle. Okay? So you can neglect the mass.
Why does the mass go? I know you said it, but I don't quite.
Oh, I say that because when I'm interested in the gear of this integral where the distances are small, what counts is integral in the large k. You see? Yes?
So can we say that does the integral for like small enough k actually cancel somehow? Or does the integral for very small k actually cancel somehow so we can remove
No, they do not cancel. They just give a very, very small contribution compared to the contribution of large k.
I'll think about it then.
Okay. Well, one has to do the calculation to be sure. But let me continue and then we come. So if you make this assumption, you can neglect the m squared term. Okay. And then you get an integral which is just an integral of something exponential of k times x divided by k squared. So this is an homogeneous integral. So this has to be, from this argument, if you neglect the mass, you can see very easily that gf of x minus y can be only a function of the modulus in the Minkowski metric of x minus y, of the x minus y vector, simply by dimensional argument. Okay? And what is this function? See, this is something which has a dimension of a moment of a momentum to the power minus 2 times an integral over the momentum. So it has a dimension in terms of momentum which is d minus 2. But momenta have the inverse dimension of distances because this is dimensionless. It's a scalar product which has to be a pure number. It's a phase. Phase is something which is between 0 and 2 pi, and 2 pi has no dimension. Okay? And pi has no dimension. So, this should behave like that. Okay? And in front of that, you have some constant which depend on the dimension, so some number. Okay? I can give you the expression of this number, but it's not very important at that stage. Okay, so you see that you have a power of the distances between the two points in the Lorentz in the Minkowski matrix to some power, and this power is negative when the dimension of space-time is larger than two. So if you are in three-dimensional space-time or in four-dimensional space-time, there is a singularity at short distance. It's diverged. There is a singularity at short distances. You see? So you may say something special happened in two dimensions because then the power is zero. But if you work a little bit more, in two dimensions, you have an integral over a two-dimensional vector divided by 1 over the norm, the square norm of this vector, and it's an integral which is logarithmically divergent. So in fact, there is also a divergent, and this behaves like minus some constant, which is a characteristic of two dimensions, times the logarithm of the distance between the two points when d, the dimension of space-time, is equal to 2. So there is also a singularity for two-dimensional space-time. Okay. See? Okay. So that's something which is very important in quantum field theory, because it means that quantum field theory is much more singular than non-relativistic quantum mechanics. Quantum mechanics correspond to, in fact, a one-dimensional space-time, because in non-relativistic quantum mechanics, you have time, but you have no space. Of course, you have when you are studying a particle moving in here in at non-relativistic space, there is space. But space is, in fact, one of the degrees of freedom of the system. So in non-relativistic system, the space is one of the phi coordinates, one of the coordinates of the field, phi. Q is phi. But time remains time, of course. So d equal 1, quantum mechanics corresponds to d equal 1. And you see that for d equal 1, you have no singularity. You have no divergence of short distance for this integral. Okay? So as soon as you are doing really relativistic quantum mechanics, which is, and in order to do relativistic quantum mechanics, you need to have at least one dimension of space in order to be able to do Lorentz transformation, Lorentz boost, and use the Poincaré line. So as soon as you have in two-dimensional space-time, in three-dimensional space-time, in our four-dimensional space-time, or in higher-dimensional space-time, the propagator, namely the expectation value of products of two field operators, is singular at short distance. Okay? And this means that, in fact, in the functional integral I wrote before, here, remember that you had everything is computed in terms of something which is exponential I, S of phi. And you may ask, what in this integral, which is in fact an integral over field phi of x, so therefore it's what is called the functional integral. Okay, what are the typical phi which contributes? Which are so in this question, it's concerned what are the typical field configurations. Okay, in one dimension where we are doing path integral, we know that the typical histories of the particle are trajectories which are continuous. You have problems because the speed may be infinite, so they may be not differentiable, but they are continuous. Here, the problem is that you see that when you try to look at, for instance, use this formula and try to define how behaves the difference between the value of the field at two neighboring points on a typical field configuration. You see? So this means what is the difference between two. And of course, when you compute that, this, what is this? This is 2 times the Feynman propagator at 0 minus the Feynman propagator at the 2 different points. Okay? And this is infinite. Okay. So you see that as soon as you consider the value, you could try to compare the value of the field in the functional integral at 2 neighboring points, it's always infinite. So it means that in fact those field configuration phi of x typical are not continuous functions. Because if they were continuous functions, this might be very large, but this would be finite. And in fact, they are not functions. Not functions, but distribution. So they are much more singular mathematical objects than what we are used to manipulate. They are a combination of delta function and even more singular objects than delta functions. So when one wants to make a good mathematical definition of this functional integral, one has to work very hard. And the mathematicians are still struggling with that, except in some simple case. Okay? And in fact, for instance, what is really the functional integral for the free field? Mathematicians are still working on it, and there have been some very fascinating developments recently in connection with problem of probabilities and of statistical mechanics. So it's still this very simple problem. It still contains a lot of mathematics, non-trivial mathematics, which is related to this short distance divergence. Okay? Good. So, and we shall encounter problems in the physics as soon as we shall deal with the interacting theory, as a consequence of the fact that typical quantum fields are much more singular objects at short distance than typical classical fields. Yes?
In the expression, we have the twice the Green's function at 0. I'm not sure why this isn't true for any 2 points, not just nearby points.
Pardon?
So why do the points have to be nearby to work better?
No, that's true for any value. But I was expecting that this, you expect this to become smaller when the points are nearby. In quantum mechanics, it's large, but it becomes smaller. In quantum mechanics, in D equal 1, this behaves like x1 minus x2. So it's finite, and it goes to 0 when x1 goes to 0. x1 goes to 0. Now, in D larger than 1, this is always infinite. So it's, you can have it's less infinite when you are close by than you are nearby. But you have this term which tells you that it's always infinite. Okay. Good. So now let me now consider start to be interested into the interacting theory of the scalar field.
Oh. Is it sensible to speak about D equals to 0 dimensions?
Yes, very much. In D equals 0 dimensions, you have no time, you have no space. What is 0-dimensional space? Just one point. You have just one point. Okay. So you have just one field five. Okay. And then what becomes the functional integral? So the functional integral becomes the integral from minus infinity to plus infinity d phi exponential I the action. What is the action? You have the kinetic term, but the kinetic term is zero because you have no time derivation. You have no time derivative. You have no space derivative. So the kinetic term is zero. But you still have the minus n squared over 2 phi squared. OK, so in zero dimension, past interval becomes ordinary integral. That's it. But what?
Oh, never mind. Sorry, I think.
Okay, so past integral or functional integral becomes ordinary complex. But still, in fact, sometimes it's interesting to consider quantum field theory by first looking at what's happening in zero dimension. But in interacting field theory, some interesting phenomena occur in zero dimension. And once you understand that, you understand already some aspects of the quantum dynamics in real space-time. Yes?
Can you think of non-integer values?
Pardon?
Can you think of non-integer values?
Yes, very much. We shall perhaps use that later. Of course, in the functional integral, we cannot define what is the key in the non-integer values. But in this expression, for instance, here you have something which depends analytically on the dimension. The dimension is just a parameter. And if you compute this parameter in this coefficient, it's a combination of gamma function and of powers of pi, so it's also, d is also a parameter. So in fact, you can consider the theory in non-integral dimension, and that's trick to study the short distance property of the quantum field theory, which has been used by Toft and Veltman to prove the renormalizability of a non-abelian gauge series. So it has been, it's a very, very important trick because it allowed to discover what are the good quantum field theory to describe the real world. And it's still very important for many, many calculations. Yes?
When you say in one dimension, we are talking about this one. So what is the idea of minus infinity and plus infinity coming from?
Oh, because in the functional integral, I am always integrating over all possible fields. So even in zero dimension, I have just one field because I have one point, and I have a field phi living on this point. I am still integrating over this field.
My point was the notion of minus infinity if you are in zero dimension.
Pardon?
What's the notion of distance in zero dimension?
The notion of distance?
Yeah,
there is no notion of distance. There is only one point. That's it. But here I am integrating over the values of the field, not on the distances in space-time, because there are no space-time. This integral is over the value of the field living on this point, which is just a zero-dimensional space-time.
I'm saying that the measure d phi, what's the notion of that measure d phi?
What is
the measure d phi?
Well, the measure is just a standard measure on R. It's a Lebesgue measure.
So you are coming back to one dimension?
No, I have zero dimension. In one dimension, I would have phi of x zero, which is time. So let us call phi q. Let us call phi x naught, call x naught time. Mm-hmm. And I recover past interval for quantum mechanics. So one-dimensional space-time is only time, no space, only time. But the field, which depends on time, becomes the coordinate degrees of freedom of the quantum system. You see, space has a very, very different meaning in non-relativistic quantum mechanics and in relativistic quantum mechanics.
Did
Just one last question. For the zero dimensional case,
yes.
There is no time.
Yes.
There cannot be, it has to be a static. It has to be static.
Of course, it's entirely static. Yes, it's just an interval.
Okay.
We are doing ordinary probability, if you want. We are studying Gaussian random variables on the line. We are doing what the mathematicians call ordinary probability theory. And in quantum theory, even at the level of quantum mechanics, can be viewed as a quantum extension of ordinary probabilities. You see, zero dimension is we have ordinary probability. As soon as we introduce time, we have non-classical probabilities. And some mathematicians and even some physicists view quantum mechanics as a non-commutative theory of probabilities. And that's one way to see that. That's it. In fact, I think they are true. So that's one way to view quantum mechanics, is to view it as a non-commutative version of probabilities. And that's an idea which goes back to, I think, John von Neumann. So it's from the 40s. Good. So now let us start to discuss about the interactive theory. So this will be mostly a toy model, because we shall be interested in the last part of the talk about physical theory. We have fermions and we have gauge field. But still, having an interacting theory of a scalar field is important for several reasons. One reason is that a scalar field is part of the content of the standard model, because the X field, the X particle, is a boson, is a scalar boson. So there is, in the standard model, a sector which is described by a scalar field. And that's a sector which has not been yet observed in experiments. So now I am considering the same theory. So I have five X, which is a scalar field, which describes, in fact, massive boson. Okay. And I want to introduce interactions between the bosons. So these bosons are not just free to propagate, and when they cross each other, they don't see each other, but when they cross each other, they may interact. Okay. So if I have a theory with only one boson, I cannot have particles like the photon, if the boson was charged. I could have particles which mediate interaction between the boson large distance. If I have only one boson and boson interacting, in order to respect relativity, I can only have contact interaction. So when two bosons are at the same place at the same time, then something may happen and they may change energies and momentum. So I need a local interaction in order to have a theory which is compatible with relativity. So the only term you can write in the is an action, in fact. The simplest term is something like that. The action, so let us start from minus d mu phi squared plus u squared over 2 squared. Okay. And now let us modify the action of the Lagrangian of the theory in order to describe the contact interaction between two bosons. So the simplest interaction is a contact interaction between two bosons. So you must have two bosons as incoming states. They interact when they are together, and they come. So the only term to describe that is a term with a phi 4. In the action, because this implies two bosons interacting and giving two bosons. Okay, and then now there is a coupling constant associated to this interaction. So I will. I'm sorry. There is a minus here because I'm in real time, and I will call the coupling constant G. That's the coupling constant, and I will normalize it for making computation more easy. by 1 over 24, which is the factorial of the power here. It's just a normalization, so G is a coupling constant. Okay? Okay. So, why do I choose? So, I will choose G to be positive. There are two reasons for that. The first reason is that if G is positive, this means that when you have, well, this times describes the fact that you have, it costs some energy to have one boson. One boson has a rest energy, which is the mass of the boson. But if you have two bosons at the same place, you have an additional energy, which is proportional to G. So this means if G is positive, that you have a contact repulsive interaction between the boson. Interaction between the bosons. Okay? And if G was negative, you would have a contact positive interaction. Bosons would attract each other if they are in contact. And for bosons, that's a disaster, because if bosons like to be together, and we are in a relativistic theory, you can create boson out of vacuum by quantum fluctuation. So imagine that you have a pair of bosons which are created by a quantum fluctuation, and they like to be together. So they will stick together. You have a pointy space where you have two bosons. Then another fluctuation, quantum vacuum fluctuation occurs. You have four bosons, and the bosons, they like to be together because they are bosons. And so you get a condensate of bosons which increase in time and which never stops. You see? So in that case, the real vacuum of the theory is unstable. So you need to have a positive interaction, coupling constant, because in order to have a vacuum which is stable. Okay? Another way to see that you must have that G is positive is that when you go to the Euclidean time formalism, let us go back to the Euclidean time formalism, the Euclidean action for the same theory is d4x 1 half of d mu phi squared plus m squared over 2 phi squared plus g over factorial of 4 phi 4. Okay? And this is some kind of effective potential. So this is the effective potential for the field. And you see that if G is negative, so if G is positive, the potential is like that. And if G is negative, the potential is like that. And you see that the potential is unbounded from below. And that's a disaster if you want to construct a functional integral for a theory with an action like that, with a potential which is unbounded from below, because in that case, this functional integral does not converge for large value of the field. In other words, this will be the classical vacuum of the theory, but you may tunnel and go to phi equal infinity, which is a disaster in a quantum theory. So it's a very unwavering way to explain things, but that's actually what happens if you try to define a theory with a negative coupling constant within this framework. Okay? So we need to have G positive. Okay? Yes?
You mentioned that if when we are in Euclidean time, our yes. potential is flipped. So what if we consider the fact that we have to flip that potential in order for us to...
No, but that's... if you start from this action in real time and you do the big rotation, you have no choice. You end up with this potential. You don't end up with a plus sign for the phi square term and a minus sign for the phi to the fourth term. Those terms are flipped together. So if you have a minus m squared phi squared minus g phi to the 4, you get a plus m squared phi squared plus g. You have no choice. Just math. Yes?
You said that the theory of having photon-mediated interaction would violate relativity.
No, I have not said that. I have said that if I wanted to introduce long-range interaction between the bosons, this would violate. Without any other quantum fields, this would violate relativity or make it very, very difficult to be satisfied. I'm not saying that having bosons interacting with a quantized electromagnetic field, then the boson must have a charge. It violates relativity. That's, of course, not true. It's perfectly consistent. I'm just saying that if I want to have a theory of bosons which interact, which self-interact between themselves with no other possible interaction with other quantum fields, that's basically the only terms you can have. Okay. If you have, if you just have, you want to have interaction between two bosons. Good. So,
the Euclidean formulations that you wrote down, would it be a good way of seeing why if you write down a 5-cube theory, say two bosons becoming one boson, would that be unstable?
Yes, because if you yes, if you have a theory with a 5-cube term, okay, it will be, well, you have already seen Feynman-Lagarde. So it's not surprising that a 5-cube term will be represented by a vertex of interaction like that between bosons, and a 5-4 term will be represented by a term like that. So a 5-cube term will represent an interaction where, for instance, one of the processes is that two bosons collide and becomes one boson, or one boson transmuted into two bosons. And if you do that, of course, then you will have a potential with the 5-cube terms plus G 5-cube terms. Okay? And this potential is like that. So if G is positive, of course, it's something which is like that. But then it becomes like that for negative. Okay. This is 0, this is 5, this is 5, and this is the potential. For G positive, it's like that, and for G negative, it's like that. So you always have an instability. Okay. So the 5-cube theory, the 6 theory, for that is used for many, many purposes. For instance, you can do a lot of computation, and it's a talk, it's a useful talk model to study quantum theory. In fact, I can add a. If you play and you take that G is I times lambda, so if the complete constant is imaginary, you can, in this theory, the instability goes somewhere in the complex plane, and you can make sense of this theory. But this theory is not unitary. So this quantum field theory, in fact, makes sense and is used for describing system in statistical mechanics, but it's not unitary. But it's an interesting theory. Okay, so now let us go back to considering this theory. Okay, so if I want to compute this theory, let me, for instance, I'm interested in computing, for instance, now what is the propagator of the theory? Phi of x, phi of y, in terms of the interaction. So this is will be given. So I know that this will be given by something like integral over exponential I s of phi, phi of x, phi of y. And normalized, if you want, by phi, by S of phi, in order to be sure that you normalize things correctly. Okay. So you know that this is the expression in functional integral, which gives you what is the expectation value in the vacuum of the product of two fields. I've not written the time order product, but that's, in fact, this in the interacting theory. Okay. Well, now I am considering this this action instead of the free field action. So one obvious idea is to consider that G is small. Small. So that we make a perturbative expansion. Expansion in the Koppling constant. Okay. So if we do that, what shall we do? We shall write that the action of the theory is the sum of two terms, the action of the free field minus g over factorial 4, a new term. So I will write that s of phi is the action for the free field minus g over factorial 4 times the integral phi to the 4, okay, and this is different from this one, so I will write this as a factor of z, let us say, for instance, okay, and well, no, that's, I will rather, it will be more convenient in the following, to consider that this is a point that I call z1, z2, okay, and compute this okay, and we can formally do that in a very easy way because we can write that this is the integral of d phi, then exponential minus s naught of phi, where this is the action for the free field, phi of z1, phi of z2, and then I expand the exponential of z term, so I have 1 minus plus minus I g over factorial 4 times integral d 4 x phi 4 of x. Then I have a second term which will be 1 half minus I g over factorial 4 to the power squared. Let me erase this integral. And now I have two integrals. So I have an integral over 2 points x1 and 2 and phi 4 of x1, phi 4 of x2, plus, etc. I have all the terms like that. And divided by the same integral without the phi of z1, phi of z2. You see? Okay. So, and the same integral without phi of z1, phi of z2 is just, so this is this same integral, okay, this integral here, is just the partition function, what we call z, for the interacting theory. So it's something that I call z of g. Okay. So well, I still have just one quarter of an hour. So let us give me just an example. Let us first compute z of g. Okay, and compare it to z of g equals 0. So let us compute this integral without the phi, and so I compute this integral with this terms, but with this terms forbidden, okay, and I want to compare it with the partition function of the free field theory, okay. So I am computing this object. And I'm dividing by this object without this complicated interaction term. Okay. So basically, what is this? This is 1, of course. If you have no coupling, this is 1. And then you have something that is just the expectation value of the products of 1 phi 4 field computed in the free theory. So this is, you can rewrite this like plus minus ig over factorial 4 integral d4x. The expectation value of a product of four fields at the same time computed in the free theory. Let me, this is the expectation value in the free theory. Okay? And then I have the same term here, plus 1/2 minus ig over factorial 4 squared. And then I have an integral over the position of 2 points. And then the expectation value of phi 4 at point at 1, phi to the 4 at the point I 2. Okay? So that's also in the free theory. Okay? So here we have expectation value of products of field in the free theory. So we can use the Wick theorem to compute those quantities. What is this object? Phi 4 of x 0. The Wick theorem tells me that it's the sum of the three possible combination of expectation value of products of two fields at the same point. But since the field have the same point, this gives the same contribution. So this is just 3 times phi 2 of x squared. Okay? And you can view that in the following way. You know, remember that the Wick theorem consists in looking at how you can connect two fields by lines, by propagators. Here I have 4 fields at the same point. This is the point x, but this is this represents 5x, 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 5x. And I am looking at how many ways there are to connect those, to build propagators out of this contribution. And for that, it's very easy to see, to construct it. Take one of the field phi, so one of the branch here, any of them, because we shall consider all of them at the end. Okay, take one of these points, and you want to build a propagator out of this point and one of them. So we can take this one, and you build this makes one of the phi squared x. Okay, and once you have done that, you have no choice for the other one. Okay, but now instead of doing that, you could have chosen this one, or you could have chosen this one. So you have 3 choices. So this term is represented by this diagram. Okay. So this diagram, which by the way is called just a Feynman diagram, represents this term. You see? Now, what is this term? It's a bit different. What is phi 4 of x1, phi 4 of x2? Okay, now you have I will need more room than that, so let us do it here. Let us do it here. Okay. So now I have 4 possibilities. This is the point x1, and this is the point 2. And now you want to use the Wick theorem to compute a product of 8 fields. You have 8 different fields, so it will be many more combinations. Okay? But still, first, of course, you can associate, you can do that, and you can obtain that. Okay? And you have, of course, 3 ways to do that, and 3 ways to do that. So you get something which is this corresponds to a term like 9 times phi 2 of x1 squared times phi square of x2 squared. So this term represents this system. Okay? Now, what you can do is that you can have take two of the fields which are here and connect them there, but choose to connect one of those five with one of those five. So to build a propagator between the point one and the point two. You see? Then, of course, this propagator, this phi, must be connected to one of those five, because you cannot connect it to any more. He is alone. So you must be do that. And then you have only one choice, which is that. Now, how many choices do you have to do that? First, you take one of these. You see? And you have, you take one of these, and you will connect to this one. But you have four ways to do that. You see? You take one of these, and you connect it to it. So you have four ways. But you have also taken this one, and you have taken to this one. So you have different ways to do that. Then, once you have done that, you have only two remaining. And for instance, if you take this one, you can connect this one to any of those four points. Then this one, you can connect it to any of the remaining three points. So you see, you have many, many possibilities. And it's a good exercise to count all the possibilities. And so you get some number here that I don't remember. But once you have done that, what is this term? This is phi squared of x1. This is phi of x1, phi of x2 squared. And this is times phi of x2 squared. Okay, so this diagram represents these products of propagator. And there is some number in front of it that I don't write it at the moment. And then you have one last possibility, which is, in fact, of course, to build, connect all of them. And these terms, there will be some number, and it will represent phi of x1, x2 to the power of 4, because we have four propagators joining the point 1 and the point 2. Okay? You see? So, let us write this here. Okay, so now you have to remember that here you have a factor 1/2. You have a factor 1 over 24 to the power squared. And you have a minus ig. So this combinatorial factor combines with those one. And in the end, the final result for this is that for this object, what is this? This object, you get that it is 1, okay, plus minus ig times this, the term represented by this diagram, where this is the point, of course, this represents the integral over x. Okay. And the final factor you get here, believe me, that's an exercise, is 1/8. Then you have the term of order minus ig squared. And this term is the sum of those two diagrams plus this diagram plus this diagram. Okay, and now, believe me, this diagram has a factor 1 over 28. This diagram has a factor 1 over 16. And this factor has a factor 1 over 48. that's the result of the calculation. If you count the number of possible ways to build these diagrams out of making applying the Vick theorem and dividing by those factors. Okay? So this is what is this is basically what is Z of G divided by Z of zero. Okay? So you see that you can represent the term of the perturbative expansion in terms of complicated integrals over products of propagator, but we can be represented by Feynman diagrams. Okay? So now let us do that for the propagator, phi of x, z1, phi of z2. Okay? We have seen that for the free theory, this is given by just the propagator, idle thing. Now, of course, you will have, if I compute the first term of the perturbative expansion, I have phi of z1, phi of z2, integral over the space of phi 4 of x, and I have to apply the Vick theorem now to phi of z1, phi of z2, phi 4 of x. Okay? So, how many combination may I compute? First, I can, of course, take the propagator between this phi and this phi and build this term from this. So I have something which is represented by minus ig times this propagator between z1 and z2 times this diagram, where this is x. Okay, that's the first term. It's not a very interesting term, but it's there. It's the product of this term by this term. Okay? Then we have a more interesting term. We have a term where we can take the propagator between this phi and one of this phi. You have four ways to do that. Okay? And you may take the propagator between this term and this term. And you have three ways to do that. So 4 times 3 equals 12, and you have to divide by 24. So you have a term which is, and this gives a diagram which is like that. This is x, this is z1, this is z2. The first propagator gives this term, the second propagator gives this term, and then it remains 2, 3, 5. That you have to build the propagator. You have no choice. So finally, this diagram gives this term. Okay? So, and that's it. You have no other terms generated by applying the Vick theorem. Okay? So those are the two terms. Yes?
One eighth in the first diagram.
The first, oh, yes, of course. So the factor, this diagram comes with a combinatorial factor of 1/8. Yeah, because 1 over 24 divided, 3 divided by 1 over 24, so you are perfectly right. There is a factor of 1/8. 1 over 8 times z1. Okay? And then you can go on, and I will just give you the term at order 2. That's an exercise. I hope you can see it. You have, of course, this propagator times this sum of three terms and times this, where this is given by all the diagrams. Then you have 1/2 times this propagator times this term here. And then you have a new and interesting term, which are this one plus
this one plus this one. Okay. And this term comes with a factor 1/4. This term comes with a factor 1/4. And this term comes with a factor 1/6. It's pretty good. Okay. And this, for instance, let us consider what does this diagram represent. This diagram represent, I will just end up with this expression. For instance, what does some of those diagrams represent? They represent an integral of products of propagators. So for instance, what does this diagram represent? This is a point z1, this is a point z2. This is an integral, I integrate out, this is 1x1 and 1x2. So this diagram represents integral over the position of the fourth point, integral over the position of the second point of this propagator, namely phi of x1, phi of z1 times phi of x1. This is this diagram, you see. This represents phi of z2 times phi of x2. And this is the propagator in the free theory. And those three propagators represent the propagator between the point phi 1 and phi x2 in the free theory. And you have three propagators. So this is to the power 3. You see? So this Feynman diagram represents this integral of a space of products of propagators, when the propagators may depend on the external points, which are fixed because we are computing expectation value in the vacuum of products of field at fixed point. Those are the external points. Those are the external points. And those are the internal points we integrate over. Cool. Okay. So you see that finally, when you compute products of operator, you get something like the expectation value of product of phi is always given by a sum over what we call Feynman diagrams. Those kind of little drawings. And to each Feynman diagram is associated a factor minus ig to the power the number of what is called vertices, okay, times a factor, let me call it c. So let me call this diagram g because it's a graph. There is a combinatoric factor, which is a bit complicated. In fact, there are rules to compute this factor, but I have no time to discuss it today. Times an integral, which depends on the external point z1. If I am computing phi of z1 up to phi of zn, so this is an integral, which is called the Feynman amplitude associated to this to the diagram. And this Feynman amplitude is just a product of propagators. So product of propagator associated to the line of the diagram. So this IG is integral over dx, let us assume that we have case. So when we, this integral over the position of the internal vertices of the diagram. So this is the external point, and these are the internal vertices. Because it's the language of graph theory, these are called the vertices of the graph, times the products over lines of the lines of the graph of free propagator associated to each line. So in fact, you see, what you have to do is you have to construct all the possible diagrams with vertices of generated by the 5-4 theory. So here you have vertices like that. To each vertex, you associate a factor minus I times the coupling constant. You have lines like that. To each line, you associate the propagator phi of x, phi of y in the free theory. So this is the propagator in the free theory. And you take the products of those quantities corresponding to a graph, and you integrate over the position of all the internal vertices, keeping, of course, the external point fixed, because you are computing expectation value of a product of operator. Okay? And once you have done that, you sum over the contribution of all possible diagrams with the topology corresponding to what you are considering, and you take into account the combinatoric factor, which comes from the fact that you may construct the diagram in a different way when you apply the Vick theorem, but there are rules to compute. Looking at the diagram, looking at each diagram, in fact, a good mathematician or a good physicist who knows the rules can tell you, haha, this diagram has this factor. And that's the way I derived those factors. I didn't count all the possible Vick contraction. I just look at the diagram and apply some internal rules and derive the factor. Okay, and once you have done that, you have constructed each term in the perturbative expansion in power of the coupling constant of the matrix element of the expectation value of a product of operator in the vacua for your interacting theory. So you see, you have a rules, which, of course, it's complicated. It's very complicated to compute these objects and to study their properties. But at least we have a simple rules to generate all the terms of perturbation theory of interacting field theory, starting from just knowing what the Lagrangian is. And that's, of course, will work for the 5-4 theory. But that works also for quantum electrodynamics, for non-abelian gauge theories. So the diagrams that David Tong has studied at zero loop. So basically, what he has been studying is the contribution of diagram like that. You can generalize that to one loop. What I call the loop is this. So you see that when you generate such diagrams, those diagrams in general have internal loops. So they have a complicated topology. And the higher you go in the perturbative expansion, the more loops you have. So the perturbative expansion is often called a loop expansion in terms of the number of loops of the diagram. Okay? Yes?
Is there time ordering implied in these expansions?
Well, this expansion, I derived this expansion from the fast integral formulation and applying Vick theorem. I know that in the Vick theorem, time ordering is automatic. It's done by the integral over fields. So everywhere here, you have time ordered product of operators. And I don't have to check that at any step. I know from the beginning that it's true from Vick theorem. So I can forget about this problem. And if I've made no error in the calculation, I know that in the final results, there will be all the operator will be time ordered, and therefore causality will be respected. Okay? Okay, sorry, I took too much time, but I wanted to finish to explain the principle of this perturbative expansion.
of course, after that, we will not consider those complicated diagrams, but some much simpler ones.